Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello, and thanks for joining us here at Africa Link. Live from Bonn, Germany, I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
And coming up, drought and hunger continues to devastate people in South Sudan.
So we're just going to the river and collect the so-called Lulu water lilies.
Also in this program...
And the Oscar goes to... Mahershala Ali.
We'll bring you the highlights from this year's Oscar Awards ceremony.
And we bring your comments on these stories.
But before that, let's catch up with the news from around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Philippine authorities on Monday have condemned the barbaric beheading of a 70-year-old German hostage over the weekend. The Islamic militant group Abu Sayyaf released a video detailing the beheading, showing Jürgen Kantner killed after a ransom deadline of more than 500,000 euros had passed on Sunday. The militant group is also believed to be holding at least 19 hostages. A member of the Philippine military has said they would continue to pursue terrorists in the country.
Our forces, as we announced previously, has not ceased and has been conducting relentless operations against terrorist groups.
Much-needed aid has arrived for tens of thousands of people in South Sudan and its northern Unity State, where the United Nations has declared a famine has taken hold. Many of those affected have been facing starvation and malnutrition after trying to escape a military conflict that erupted between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar in December 2013. A UN worker in the country told reporters that Monday is the first time aid has been delivered in many months.
So what we've had is for many, many months, humanitarian agencies have not been able to make it into this area. This is the first time that we're doing so. And so it's a real issue. What we need people to understand is that without safety, without assurance for security for the people that are in need and for the aid workers, we'll be having a catastrophic situation down the line.
Meanwhile, Pope Francis has said he would consider visiting South Sudan with the head of the Anglican Church to bring attention to the suffering of people struck by civil war and famine in the northeastern African country, where over 1 million people face dire conditions. Francis made his comments during a visit to mark the 200th anniversary of Rome's Anglican Church, the first visit to the parish by a pope. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Israeli aircraft has on Monday attacked five positions belonging to Hamas, the Islamist group that runs the Gaza Strip. The airstrikes have reportedly wounded four people. An Israeli military spokesman said it attacked the Hamas positions after rocket fire from the Palestinian territory hit an area in southern Israel. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the rocket attack. A car bomb has injured five Somali soldiers in capital Mogadishu. Security officials said a manhunt is underway for supposed members of the radical Islamist Al-Shabaab group, who are believed to have remotely exploded the car bomb after fleeing on foot. Al-Shabaab has not yet released a comment on the bombing. And in other news, people from all over the world have taken to the streets in Germany's Rhineland region to enjoy Rosenmontag Carnival celebrations. Like every year, this year's carnival has poked fun of politicians and figureheads, with parade floats featuring U.S. President Donald Trump, U.K. Foreign Minister Boris Johnson, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel. And in Bundesliga news, Dutchman Andreas Juncker has been appointed as head coach of Wolfsburg. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Seeking divine intervention, Pope Francis is considering a visit to South Sudan as the world's youngest nation grapples with famine and conflict. The UN has said nearly 100,000 people are without food in Unity State. As our correspondent Wake Simon Wudu, who visited the region, reports, some people have turned to eating water lilies to survive.
I am standing next to a UN World Food Programme, WFP distribution centre in Leer, where thousands of civilians are queuing for registration to get food rations. Andrew Rann, 47, with seven children, is one of 56,000 civilians who have been affected by famine in Leer. Speaking while queuing so as to get registered, he says they only survive on wild plants such as water lilies in the absence of humanitarian aid.
So we just going to the river and collect the what so-called water lilies. The enemies is always coming. We have enemies all the time. We have enemies. That's because we are not cultivated here in the area. All this area, people are not cultivated.
Leer, controlled by the rebels, is home to South Sudan rebel leader and former First Vice President Riek Machar. There are no government services here for the last 3 years since conflict broke out. Walls of houses belonging to the locals and public structures can be seen burnt to ashes. Locals say government forces burnt the area last December. Another local, Bol Mol, 45, who claims he has 39 children, says he has been forced to change eating habits for his family.
Our traditional system, people are eating two at a day, morning and evening. And then like situation of this time, if people are get food, if you eat in the evening, meanwhile in the evening you overnight, you eat the other day. That's the system that we are now.
UN agencies have declared Leer as a famine hit area in South Sudan. The World Body says 100,000 people are affected by the famine and have limited access to humanitarian aid services. George Fomien, an official with the WFP, says insecurity challenges and blockages by government on aid agencies to reach areas with people in need of aid has worsened the situation.
The biggest issue has been insecurity in some of these areas, which makes it difficult to access. And so we've heard from people in this community that they have been constantly under attack, that homes have been burnt, and so people flee.
The UN says 4.9 million people, more than 40% of the country's population, are in need of urgent food aid.
Wake Wudu Simon reporting from South Sudan's famine-stricken Unity State. Let's remain with the same topic of drought and head to Somalia. Thousands of people are streaming into the capital Mogadishu in search of food as a result of prolonged drought. International aid agencies say they are overwhelmed. The UN has warned that out of the 10 million Somalis, half of them are in urgent need of humanitarian assistance. Alfred Kitty reports.
Dried up rivers, the scorching sun and dust blown by a whirlwind is what welcomes you to Garowe, the second largest city of Puntland State in northern Somalia. 100 kilometers away from the city is Dangoroye Camp for internally displaced persons or IDPs. Over 75 families, most of them pastoralists, live here. They survive on a $100 cash transfer program per month offered by humanitarian organization Save the Children International. 74-year-old Jama Farah lives at the IDP camp with his wife and a dozen children. They are left with only a small herd of livestock after over 500 of their goats died. His sons left for the coastal region of a month ago to look for pasture following the ravaging drought.
At this moment, what we need most is water and food. If we don't get this, too, life would be at risk. That is the most important and our priority for now.
Over 6 million people, who constitute about 50% of the population in Somalia, are affected by the current drought. 60-year-old Dahab Abdallah is one of them.
There is no rain and pasture for the goats. I'm 60 years old and I've never had or seen this kind of drought before. People are dying because there's no food and water. The situation in both Upper and Lower Somalia is similar.
Those mostly affected are the elderly, women and children. Malnutrition among children below 5 years is a common phenomenon. At the Garowe General Hospital Stabilization Center, operated by Save the Children International, an 8-month-old girl, Habiba, has been admitted with acute malnutrition. Nutrition specialist Saeed Ahmed Yassin quit his job at a private hospital in Nairobi to work as a volunteer at the Garowe General Hospital in Puntland.
Imagine, I had a good job in Nairobi, but I left it when I saw that people were dying from avoidable conditions like dehydration and malnutrition. I decided to come and work here as a volunteer to help in the problem they are facing.
Insecurity is the greatest challenge to humanitarian organizations in that area. At least $1 billion is needed in Somalia to feed the over 6 million people affected by the current drought.
Alfred Kitty reporting in Nairobi.
Now, Crispin, we are receiving comments on these two stories. One from Kaigo. Alfred says, we should do something for them, otherwise things will continue getting worse. Of course, we are getting these comments from our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Right, now let's join the world of glamour, superstars and celebrities. Hollywood seized the global platform of the Oscars on Sunday evening to take on President Donald Trump's controversial policies. And this year's ceremony also saw more people of color winning the coveted golden statuettes than any other year since the Oscars were founded. Eunice Wanjiru with some of the highlights.
And the Oscar goes to Mahershala Ali.
Mahershala Ali made history after he became the first Muslim film star to pick up a golden statuette. He won the Best Supporting Actor in the film Moonlight. Other notable winners were Damien Chazelle, who also became the youngest director to win an Oscar with the musical La La Land. The Oscar award for the Best Foreign Language Film went to The Salesman, an Iranian film directed by Asghar Farhadi. He, however, did not attend the ceremony in protest of President Trump's travel ban on seven Muslim-majority nations, which include Iran. Host Jimmy Kimmel poked fun at Trump's deteriorating relationship with the media. The U.S. president has constantly accused mainstream media networks such as CNN of disseminating fake news.
If there's anyone here from CNN or the L.A. or New York Times, if you work for anything with the word times in it, even like medieval times, I'd like to ask you to leave the building right now, okay? We have no tolerance for fake news. Fake tans, we love.
The ceremony also had a tense moment after La La Land was mistakenly named the best film. Moonlight was actually the winner. Despite that loss, La La Land was the big winner, taking home six Oscars.
Eunice Wanjiru reporting.
And now back to the social media desk. We are still receiving your comments on the stories we've been running, and Kolud Ayash says, do not give me fish, but teach me how to do that. And on this, he's commenting on the two stories of drought that we had earlier in the show. Crispin, we also have another comment here coming in from Ogbona Tobias, who says, it's not only East Africa, Nigeria also needs food. And this is also another topic that I think we have been covering over and over again. And you can see some of the stories on our DW webpage where we have more of these stories. Another comment from Saeed Omar Hassan says, one day everything will be all right. He's encouraging the people there with his comment.
Just to mention, Wanjiku, I just came from Kenya the other day and I saw how much the country is suffering. The people have cut down trees and it's quite sad to see, because people are now really realizing that cutting down trees is not the best solution to just survive, because otherwise, you know, then there's no rainfall and that causes all this drought that we are seeing at the moment.
Yes, indeed. And we hope that the Green Belt movement across Africa that is aiming to have a better green coverage over the continent is actually going to be successful. We are definitely looking forward to the progress of that.
And now the Oscars? Any
yes.
comments on that?
Yes, a lot of them. As you know, Crispin, everyone has been talking about how people announced, oh, La La Land was the winner, but not yet. One comment here from Scotty, she says that no one is celebrating that Moonlight won. Instead, it's a celebration of an award being snatched from a white production. This is really annoying. Of course, Oscars has been mad with reports of racial segregation, as you might remember from last year, where there was a trending hashtag, Oscars so white.
I remember that very well. All right, Wanjiku, let's leave it at that at the moment. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanjiku Mwaura.
This is Africa Link, and here's what's coming up in the next quarter of an hour. Ghanaian women protest against male midwives.
I don't see why another man should see my privacy, something that my husband alone should be seeing.
And today, Nokia 3310, one of the most robust mobile phones of its time, was relaunched 17 years after the first release. What are your thoughts? We'll find out more a little later.
Stay tuned for these stories, plus a look at the German Bundesliga in our Monday Sports Roundup. But first, there's a gradual protest in Ghana against the stationing of male midwives in labour wards. Pregnant women claim they are finding it difficult to allow a man to attend to them, saying their privacy has often been compromised because the male midwives stare at their nakedness. For this reason, the Ministry of Health has decided to ban males from studying at the midwifery schools. Maxwell Souk reports.
It is morning in Tamale, Ghana's northern province. Adama Mina, a 33-year-old expectant mother, is at the Tamale Teaching Hospital in the gynecology ward, waiting to be examined. However, she looks uncomfortable that a male specialist is going to take her through.
I would like a fellow woman to examine me. It is not right in our religion for a man to see the nakedness of another man's wife.
The government started introducing male midwives into the system in 2013 as a pilot project, but there seems to be a gradual protest against the move. Fushena, a mother of two, told me that there are certain things that should be reserved only for women.
You cannot tell a man everything like you would tell a woman, but at this point, we have no choice. It's a problem.
A male midwife, Mohammed Alukman, allays the fears of the women.
I delays their privacy, and for that matter, you need to be concerned with their privacy on whatever you are doing for her. Always make sure that you curtail the lady, and then make sure that her privacy must not be exposed to the next person.
Lukman is right. It is unethical for a nurse or medical specialist to disclose patient information to the third party. But somehow, the women are still skeptical about that. Many expectant mothers prefer traditional birth attendance than the health facility for such reasons. The Ministry of Health has stopped admitting fresh students to study as midwives for such reasons. But Esther Dudu, the Deputy Director of Nursing Services, Obstetric and Gynec Wards at the Tamale Teaching Hospital, backs the idea to have male midwives.
It would be wise if we continue training them, because they can at least leave their families in town, and then they will be in the hinterlands saving the mothers. If the difficulty is because they are males, I think the populace need to be educated for them to know who they are and what they can do for them.
But not every woman here have problem with male midwives and doctors attending to them. Abu Maria told me she likes the services a male midwife offered her in times of her delivery.
Oh no, I wouldn't feel bad. He's doing it for a purpose. I came there for a reason. He didn't just meet me on the way, put me on the ground and start doing all those things. I came for my personal health. I came there to deliver. And whatever he is supposed to do to get me out of the situation safely with me and my baby, I don't have any problem with that.
The Ministry of Health has suspended the intake of male midwives since the concerns arose from the public. In the north, the Muslim community is frowning against the practice of male midwives attending to expectant mothers. It is, however, unclear what will be the final outcome of the directive in the coming weeks.
DW correspondent Maxwell Souk with that report.
Health check.
Almost half of all Kenyans can't afford to consult a doctor when they fall sick. A team of young Kenyan IT specialists came up with a prize-winning plan to change that. Afya Plan is an innovative model to tackle Kenya's health sector, which has been crippled by a doctor's strike for nearly 3 months. And the founders of the scheme have been declared winners of this year's Hacking for Health competition in Berlin. This report by Daniel Pels is now presented by Zipporah Nyambura.
The 50 contestants had exactly 72 hours to pitch their ideas for an innovative and local solution on healthcare for children and adolescents. With Kenya's ailing health sector in the limelight, the team of four young IT specialists came up with a prize-winning plan to change that. The winning idea is called Afya Plan and is expected to offer a solution to millions of Kenyans who cannot afford medical care. Ethrada Chow is part of the winning team.
Almost half of the Kenyan population living below the poverty line. This means they cannot afford basic healthcare services. They have food to buy, they have children to take to school, so they end up not thinking of financing their healthcare. So they only think of healthcare when they get sick. And most of the times, at that time, they don't have the money at the moment.
The plan is modeled along the lines of Kenya's traditional micro-saving groups known as chamas. If their Afya Plan scheme becomes reality, parents could form saving groups and send weekly contributions to an online platform via SMS using Kenya's popular mobile payment system, M-Pesa. If one of their children is sick, they can receive a loan from the group's savings, provided other group members agree. The medical fees are then directly transferred to the hospital or the doctor treating the child. 22-year-old Chow and three other Kenyan ITs decided to use the idea of chamas, which is a merry-go-round idea of contributing money very common in Kenya. Each member has to pay a fixed amount into a common fund, usually at weekly meetings. Salome Ngata, Kenya public health specialist, was one of the jury members.
I think because of the constraint of human resources, the e-health would actually be a multiplier, so that the out-of-pocket payments will be decreased, and then even women can actually have a voice to negotiate. They can negotiate with the insurance companies, they can negotiate with the hospitals to receive better care and at a low cost.
But there are plenty of challenges waiting for Ethrada Chow and her winning team. The borrowers have to repay the loans together with a small fee, which will be split between their saving groups and the team of Ethrada Chow and Jackson Carey. They still have to find a solution in the event that too many members of their scheme fail to repay their loans. Part of the award they received in Berlin includes getting working space, software, and assistance from experienced mentors to develop Afya Plan further.
And that report was written by Danielle Pels. To sports now, and to talk about the Bundesliga, I'm now joined by Robert Tanner from the news desk. Rob, let's begin with the Bundesliga leaders Bayern München, who are celebrating 117 years since the club was formed. And they proved a point with their demolition of Hamburg FC over the weekend.
Well, yeah, indeed. Bayern had been coming in for a little bit of criticism, Carlo Ancelotti as well, that they weren't as spectacular, weren't as dominant as they were under Pep Guardiola. But in recent weeks, we've seen that they're back to their unbeatable best. They beat Hamburg 8-0 at the weekend. They beat Arsenal 5-1 in the Champions League a few weeks before. And it sent out an important message from them to the rest of the Bundesliga that they're not to be messed with.
Robert Lewandowski of Bayern Munich scored a hat-trick for the team and is now joined top scorer with Dortmund's striker Pierre Aubameyang. Who's your favourite to become this year's top scorer, and why do you think they should become the top scorer?
Well, it's going to be a very close race. I mean, Lewandowski's got the advantage of playing for Bayern, so that means that they create more chances than every other team. So he's always going to have more opportunities to score. But Aubameyang is much more explosive. And there's an interesting stat at the weekend. Aubameyang moved on to 103 goals for Borussia Dortmund. He got that in 172 games. Lewandowski scored 103 goals for Dortmund, but it took him 15 games longer. So Aubameyang is more capable of going on a very explosive scoring spree. However, due to the fact that Bayern are so dominant, I'm going to stay safe and say Lewandowski.
We'll see about that. Right, let's talk about tomorrow. There's a game coming up. Dortmund will meet Sportfreunde Lotte in the quarterfinals of the German DFB Cup.
How do you see that match playing out?
Well, on paper, it was the easiest draw that Dortmund could have got. But in reality, I don't think they're going to look forward to it. Lotte's last two home games have been called off because the pitch was unplayable. There's going to be a very tight game on a very muddy pitch. There's going to be an electric atmosphere. Dortmund have got everything to lose by going there. All they can do is embarrass themselves if they don't win comfortably. However, I do expect them to get through to the semi-finals.
Last but not least, we have some changes at Wolfsburg. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, it all happened very quickly. On Sunday, Wolfsburg sacked Valerian Ismail, who'd only been coach since October. And today they unveiled their new coach, which is Andries Jonker. He used to work at Wolfsburg. He was the assistant to Felix Magath a few years ago. He also was assistant to Louis van Gaal at Bayern and at Barcelona. And most recently, he's been working at Arsenal in charge of the youth team there. So it's someone who knows the club, who knows the players. He's already worked with the players before. And Wolfsburg are in a desperate situation. They're only 2 points ahead of relegation. It's their third coach of the season already, but they had to act because at the moment they were at risk of going down.
DW's Robert Tanner. And these news just in, at least 5 Somali soldiers were injured on Monday when a car they were chasing blew up in the capital, Mogadishu, security officials and witnesses told German news agency DPA. Mojiku, back to you.
Yes, indeed. So, Crispin, today is the Rosenmontag in Germany, in the Rhineland region. And on this day, we see the longest procession that this region can ever see in a year. But what is the Rosenmontag? Do you know what it is?
Well, I can only say that it is the Rosmonday in English. It's translated as Rosmonday. And it is the occasion for the people in this region to be crazy, to do all that they have wanted to do the whole year before they start fasting before the Easter celebrations. And it is colourful. It is colourful, I must say.
And you're right with your definition. I mean, this is a tradition that has been carried on for ages and has incorporated with it Christianity as well. And so it marks the start of the 40-day fasting season of the Catholic Church. Have you ever attended a carnival before?
Well, I live nearby. I live in town, so I always see the procession. I don't need to attend. I don't need to be part of the procession. But I can see my producer and the program assistant, they are all dressed in their angelic costumes, looking great. So, I've not been to any one of them, but I live and I have seen many of them.
I did go to one yesterday in a small village here in Germany. And you, dear listener, you can check out the video on our Facebook page and get a feel of what it's like. And this is just in the small village. So in the bigger cities, it gets really, really loud and crazy. And it's just a big party going on for about 5 days. And this is an event that actually attracts so many people to Cologne, especially. About 1.5 million come to this festival. And 2 billion euros at least are spent in hotel bookings, in costume hirings. It's a huge, big deal in this region. But something else is also happening today. Nokia 3310. Crispin.
Oh, my favorite phone is back.
Yes, indeed. It was released today after 17 years, and it was stopped. The production was stopped in 2005. So people had been wondering what is going on. And it's one of the most reliable phones that you could have. And now they've made it better, Crispin.
I remember it could go on and on and on without needing a charge. And they say it can now last still up to 1 month without charging.
Imagine that. Perfect.
I'm getting myself one.
I am still not too sure because I don't know how the Facebook and WhatsApp situation is looking like. Until I have that figured out, maybe I will get one or I'll use yours. We do have comments here. Emmanuel Aidu says, I need the old 3310. I want my life back. Please make my privacy great again. Of course, the old phone did not have very good internet connection, if at all. And this, of course, meant that you were
more secure than nowadays.
That's true. What I remember about the Nokia 3310 is that when it fell down, it just broke into several pieces. Then you just put it all back together and you're good to go.
It's like magic.
Exactly.
Another comment here from Morgan Wahome says, I had fallen in love with that phone till it disappeared. Of course, people like you, Crispin, are really looking back for this phone to come back, and now it's back. Daniel Castillo says, no Facebook and no WhatsApp? No, thanks. Well, Benjamin Awon also writes on our Facebook page and says, I need the old one at any cost. I detest the new one. Of course, the new one has a new design and looks sleek. So we'll see, Crispin, when you get yours.
All right, Wanjiku, that does it for this edition of Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
Take care.